ever since the relaunch, of course, of Siren on Monday. Siren Radio has been quite excited by those new dynamic jingles, but they are a bit scary. Anyway, don't be frightened, don't be afraid, all's well with the world, because here's the weather forecast for Lincoln from Gabriella Peralta in Gibraltar.
Highs of 18 degrees centigrade, lows of 13 degrees centigrade. The early low cloud and patchy rain will quickly clear to give a pleasant, warm and dry day.
Live from Gibraltar, with or without her faithful friend Frodo, it's time for Gabriella Peralta on the Midweek Drive Morning Edition.
Yay! One day, Lauren, we'll get a jingle for you.
That'd be lovely.
Exactly. Obviously, we're working our way through the whole process because it's taken a time to actually get you into the studio.
Yeah.
And lo and behold, Holly McGrattan and Tessa Snart and Alison Moore, they just realised, oh, she's just too good for us. We can't be on the same show. It's all important. Gabriella is a graduate of the University of Lincoln and is now one of the finest contributors to the Gibraltar Chronicle you could ever wish. Normally a weekly soul who's with us, except, of course, last week, Gabriella, when, as we said, you very graciously, I say that again, very graciously gave up your Gibraltarian slot where you fly the flag of Gibraltar in Lincoln for our students who are actually over in Penang, one of whom actually is a colleague of Lauren Ward. Of course, that's Molly Richardson. So there we are. That was the reason, so it's all good. Anyway, what's the weather like in Gibraltar, Gabriella?
It's a bit rainy today. It's been rainy yesterday as well, so it's not as warm. But when saying that, it's still about the 23 degrees, so it's a bit of that strange, you can wear a T-shirt, but it's in the rain.
And that can't, sometimes it's not a good look because then you get it wet and we just don't do wet T-shirts. Sorry, it's just not appropriate. We talked about this last time. Your memory, you see, that will be yourself in a few years' time, Laura. Actually, not a few years' time. No, 1 year's time, exactly. Lauren, talk to us. Talk to us about Signet PR, because I suspect even Gabriella might not have been aware. Or were you, Gabriella, aware as a journalism undergraduate?
I remember it.
Yeah, okay.
I think I remember it, but only a couple of times, I think the PR students may have joined the journalism club. Not too sure.
Obviously, we like to think the journalism students join the PR students, but yes. Yeah, it's all part of the whole thing. Anyway, Lauren, share with us and Gabriella, what is Signet PR all about?
We have actually had a lot of journalism students be interested this year. It's a student-led PR agency, so we get involved with a lot of clients across Lincolnshire, and whatever goals, objectives they have as students, we practice what we learn and we try and meet those objectives.
And in addition to that, of course, which is clearly the corporate line of routine, you get to cover things like the Lincoln Book Festival, Lincoln Lights and other areas. Mm-hmm. Last night, of course, David Starkey was privileged to actually have you in his audience, I believe, Lauren.
He was privileged to have me write up all of his speech.
Yeah, and how did he go? Because again, I wasn't following it on social media. So what sort of exciting things did David Starkey have to say?
He was very opinionated about Henry VIII and made a few political satire amongst it all. Very interesting from the perspective of propaganda in that age and how Henry VIII would go about creating this narrative of history. It was fascinating from a PR student point of view to listen to how it has changed and how narrative and story and how he wanted to frame his triumph of the war was framed in his words.
And in some ways hasn't changed, of course, which is quite interesting. Gabriella, have you got any questions you want to put to Lauren about life, the universe and various other things? Because clearly you graduated and left the city of Lincoln way before Lauren actually sort of signed up on this whole sort of basis. But that's okay, because she's a bit like a sort of... she's like a time lady. Ageless, is Gabriella. It's like a sort of a classic sort of...
You're making me feel old.
No, we're all chronologically gifted. That's the important thing.
It's not that long. It's only been 3 years. I'm quite interested. So in Signet PR, so you have your clients, and so they tell you we want... press releases... Or what do you do exactly for your clients?
Sometimes we do press releases if they've got a newsworthy event. Social media is a big thing, because that's something, if we don't have a budget, then you know, we really make optimization of that, and that's something we can really get creative with and come up with ideas, do video content, graphic design. It really is strategic ideas and thinking with Signet. Yeah, it's a lot of fun.
Now, if somebody's actually wanting to access some of the social media that you put together on, for instance, Twitter last night, in terms of what's taking place in various other areas, where should they actually go? Apart from Twitter, obviously, I appreciate that. You know, what's the hashtag? What are the things that we're looking
for? The hashtag was Go Gothic and hashtag David Starkey for last night's event. Mm-hmm. I think there were 7 events this week at Lincoln Book Festival, so there was different ones. I think if you follow UL PR degrees, they were retweeting and supporting our students there this week.
And as a graduate, you can, of course, do that as well, which is wonderful from that sort of point of view. Mm-hmm. Clearly, I'm unable to actually do a double sort of routine here of signing into Twitter and at the same time. I'll get it sorted out. It'd be marvellous stuff there. Gabriella, we haven't asked the important question, which even Lauren isn't familiar with. How is Frodo this morning?
He's asleep. Very asleep. He's ate his breakfast, so he's having the food coma.
In case you're wondering, Lauren, any sort of new listeners, Frodo is not a hobbit that Gabrielle actually looks after whilst being based in Gibraltar. He is indeed a pug. Okay.
Oh, how cute!
So, and the critical thing, it's a bit like, you know, checking the weather scenarios and things. That is Frodo conscious? Is he unconscious? And we kind of follow the seasons through that. There's got to be a motion picture made, I think, about the state of play with Frodo one of these days, Gabriella. We'll get that sort of through. What goes on in, we call it, what goes on in Frodo's mind?
Oh,
perhaps
not much.
Yeah, but you don't know. He could be hyperactive. There, he could be saving the universe in many ways. So just,
in his dreams.
Yeah,
maybe
exactly.
I hope
so. Okay, we have 2 final questions, and as it's Lauren's first show, it falls to myself to put them to you. Good self, Gabriella. Have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us on the program this morning? What do you do for the rest of the day, by the way? Are you any particular stories you're covering that you're sort of working with and so on?
Today my diary's pretty clear. I've got a charity story to write up.
Mm-hmm.
We'll
find out about that.
A heavy week, of course, and more stuff, but this week's a bit more light.
Well, exactly. It's light and dark. It's balancing. Next time we speak, of course, Gabriella, it will actually be October. Yes. Will you be back and returning with us next week?
I'll be back in October.
Exactly. She's a black belt in karate, working for the city. She has to discipline her body, 'cause she knows that it's demanding to defeat the
Yoshime. They don't believe me, but you won't let those robots defeat me. Yoshime. They don't believe me, but you won't let those robots defeat me. Yoshime. They don't believe me, but you.
The Flaming Lips and Yoshimi battling the pink robots. Somebody was actually battling the cyberspace demons was J.P. Dickey on behalf of Richard Fitzwilliams recently. Isn't that right, Richard?
Well, it most certainly is. May I attribute to him on air because with gentleness, kindness and hyper-efficiency, he has dealt with the threat which only remains now for Google to remove the very last parts of it, which is reported, and I have to thank him on air profoundly, and Siren for having put us in touch.
Well, that's what we do, Richard, you see, and I'm putting you in touch with another fine soul now who's actually just... I mean, I'm saying chair of the Signet PR Society, or Signet PR Company, etc. Is that... What's the official title that you've got these days, Lauren?
Signet PR Student-Led Agency.
Signet PR Student-Led Agency,
yes.
And you were elected...
I was elected for chair, yes.
Chair, exactly, which is wonderful. And Lauren is one of our ace PR students, Richard, so clearly great excitement here, especially when I say that last night, Lauren, you were seeing who?
David Starkey.
Exactly, and tweeting and doing all sorts of things about that. Now, if Richard wanted to follow your tweets, would he actually go to the same sort of line as well from that perspective? In terms of Go Gothic, hashtag Go Gothic?
Yes.
Hashtag Go Gothic.
Go Gothic, exactly.
Sounds rather fun. And also, I would mention that David Starkey was the pioneer of the what has, I think, been so tremendously valuable with Simon Scarmer, Bettany Hughes. I mean, so many top, Professor Richard Holmes, of course, in a slightly different way. But, I mean, no question, to get history across, to explain it, to make it something that, you know, wasn't dry as it is so often in classrooms. I mean, he was really, really superb. And I mean, whether you're looking at his series of music and royals or whether you're looking back at his extraordinary programs on the Tudors, which of course has become a national obsession, I mean, he's responsible for a very, very great deal. By that, I don't mean he hasn't been controversial. He's been known as the rudest man in England, and good heavens, I picked up fascinating footage from 1981, a year or two ago, when Richard III was put on trial, and they had, I think it was 2.5 hours, it's absolutely fascinating, incidentally, it's not the length, it gripped me. Starkey spoke for Richard being indicted for crimes, and was so appallingly rude to judge and jury that I think he helped get Richard off. But this is a character who's contributed tremendously to national life. I've met him on several occasions, quite often at Buckingham Palace, in fact, and he is someone to whom we owe a great deal of a great debt of gratitude, because somebody should stir the waters, but also with a constructive way he's able to convey history and verbally, absolutely marvellous, I think, what he's done overall, but also to become, keep a lively profile, shall we say.
Well, Richard, I have to hold my hand up and say that I wasn't able to make the talk myself, so therefore I wasn't able to relay to Lauren beforehand that you wanted to pass on your best wishes to David Starkey.
Oh,
But
yes, yes, indeed, because, as I say, he has done the state some service, to quote from Othello.
Oh, yeah, see, that's a quote you could put in a tweet, really, Lauren. Yeah. Done the state some service, yeah. William Shakespeare, nice choice, National Poetry Day. And here was I going to say, I have never seen, the line I was going to quote, oh, yes, I think that I shall never see a poem lovely as a tree. Or maybe a Borg versus McEnroe movie. Oh, I don't know where we're going necessarily with that, but I suspect we might have two middling reviews here from Richard. The general vibe for both his choices of movies today were, well, they've got good bits, they've got less good bits. I was just staggered that actually in Borg versus McEnroe, Richard, they didn't actually, the artists, so we say, they didn't use real tennis balls. Those tennis balls were computer-generated tennis balls. They're not actually...
I'm very glad that I didn't know that before I saw the film, because I do not know why people want to know how these films are made. May I give you one example, and I know I'm bringing Lawrence of Arabia up again, but when we heard the assistant director introduce it at the National Film Theatre last Friday, and we saw the scene where women, who of course in Arab countries at that time they would not appear facially, but also, in fact, in certain circumstances, would not even allow parts of their bodies to be photographed. And, in fact, a woman's hand, where there's Prince Faisal's army is moving after a Turkish aerial attack, well, it was, in fact, the assistant director who we were listening to, whose hand it was, tanned and bejeweled, quite extraordinary. If you'd like knowing that sort of thing... then I accept that...
Some of us like trailers, Richard. Some of us watch the trailers whilst you're giving your reviews.
Some of us like spoilers, exactly.
Exactly.
I mean, frankly, I have a confession. Firstly, I'm not going to reveal who won the famous duel at Wimbledon, because...
Oh, come now, Richard. You can easily Google that. It took place in 1980.
Everybody may know, but not absolutely everybody may know. And also, I'm also not going to reveal how the film ends, because there's an extremely interesting twist at the climax. And every review I read, two or three online, they've all revealed this. It's simply unnecessary. Let people discover for themselves. Frankly, as a biopic, the best one, far, far superior, was Rush, the rivalry between Hunt and Lauda. I mean, now that was a balanced movie. It was first class, it was brilliantly filmed, it was well performed, I thought it was excellent. This has appeal because I like tennis and I used to go to Wimbledon a long time ago, admittedly. But we have here John McEnroe, played by Shia LaBeouf, versus Bjorn Borg, played by Sverre Gudmundsson, and it's directed by Janus Metz-Pertersen, and guess who the hero is? In fact, one of the extraordinary things that I did discover was a complaint by McEnroe. It's hardly surprising when you see the movie that no one approached him before it was being made. He had nothing to do with it, and it's unsurprising because there is one hero in this movie, as there was at Wimbledon, so it is, of course, Bjorn Borg, who is fascinating, because what we discover, and this I will obviously discuss, is that the two characters had a great deal of similarity temperamentally. It was only that when Borg was growing up, and he was someone who had these extraordinary fetishes, and, for example, he used to practice against a certain part of a wall, and when he became famous, the television cameras wanted to film where it was. He takes them to where he thinks it was, and he can't remember precisely where it was, and so he won't let them film him. His father came to Wimbledon once every 2 years. He always stayed in the same hotel, all the sort of thing. Apparently, he and his coach tested the strings of 50 rackets before each match. This sort of eccentricity.
Is that eccentricity or is it OCD? I mean, you know, there's always a line there, or is it simply a case of, well, he's suffering a nervous breakdown, you know?
There's no nervous breakdown with Borg. The facts are that Borg is totally, almost boringly, frankly, in control, because, I mean, he was rather like a form of a rock. I would pay tribute to his kindly trainer, who also is extremely tough, played by Stellan Skarsgård, who's a very good actor, and the relationship between them makes total sense, and you can follow Borg and his attractive wife, and you could follow Borg and his adoring fans, and everything linked to Borg is something that you want to cheer about. In contrast, everything, absolutely everything that we see about McEnroe shows him as aloof, yes, portraying him well enough in the sense that...
Cutting to the quick, Richard, is Shia LaBeouf...
is absolutely vile in every respect. We see constant and endless tantrums of one sort or another, insulting the press...
So does he actually manage to challenge his authentic performance that he gave us in the Transformers series? Because that, ultimately, is surely Shia's legacy for the world.
Not a legacy that I'm personally familiar with, I have to say.
Oh, Richard...
No, but we can't be familiar with all of them. The facts are that his legacy for the world will not be much influenced by his performance here, simply because of the material. If you're playing literally playing a villain, the reason I condemn this, it's not Shia LaBeouf's fault at all. The facts are simply that the script makes him so horrible. But he's skilled, of course, and the famous duel at Wimbledon is absolutely terrific, I have to say. It's very exciting, and it is superbly done. And, of course, the performers couldn't play tennis as the professionals could. So the way it's handled, it's rather like those fights in Gladiator with certain cuts.
But they're all real, surely, Richard. Anyway, let's ask Lauren. You've seen the trailer whilst Richard was speaking there. Richard's given a very, as ever, consummate, professional, objective review of the whole system. Does Borg versus McEnroe float your boat? Is it something you're going to put on your list of things to see?
My friends were talking about going to see it.
Mm-hmm.
So I might get dragged along.
Dragged along.
Might get dragged along, right, yeah.
Okay.
Might make a little bit of a protest on one area, and that is what I would like to see. We see how Borg developed, and we see why he became as he was there, a rock that was completely unflappable and showed no emotion. And we also see all McEnroe's tantrums of one sort or another. There's nothing that we don't see in that regard. In fact, he literally does almost nothing else. But the...
You cannot be serious, Richard.
Well, I am serious. You see the movie, you will see a series of constant bad behavior. Indeed, even the way he behaves to his friend, removing, or the movie implies he removes a rather important prop, which this player uses in his shoe so that he can beat him. But what I wanted to know was why McEnroe actually developed in the way that he did. What was the reason for all the showmanship, because Borg, although he could be temperamental, as we saw, was never to the level where the man in the world.
Quite simply, McEnroe had his issues because of the hair bands that he wore. I think that actually restricted his blood flow and therefore led to somewhat unusual behaviour. That's my theory.
You explained it to me. Now, why didn't I film?
Well, you know, sometimes. A couple of years ago, Richard was eulogising about this next Matthew Vaughan adventure that was coming through. I suspect that the sequel, The Golden Circle, might not have him eulogising quite as much.
I have to say I wasn't eulogising. What I thought was it was an extremely excellent idea, the idea that you send up the British obsession with class and you create a colourful spoof of the spy film genre. Yes, great fun, but what I thought ruined the first one was the fact at the end the violence in the church. I protested about that because it was extreme. It just went over the top at the end, but it was extremely enjoyable before it got there, and this pointed to a series that was really going to be enormous fun. And in fact, it's appalling. This is a load of nonsense. And let me just begin by saying that the villain of this movie, it's a wonderful cast. Good Lord, she's Julianne Moore, playing Poppy Adams, who is based in Poppy's Diner. That's part of a Disney-fied jungle retreat, a sort of mixture between Disney World and Las Vegas, from where she threatens the world and can, for some reason, launch missiles, where she spends most of the film in an apron behind a diner, because it's as though she was in a 50s time warp in some way. And she puts her enemies through a mixer quite frequently. Now, that is where the script of this puerile nonsense should have been shredded.
I get the feeling, Lauren, he's not really a fan of Kingsman 2. When the phrase puerile nonsense is actually used,
yes,
it's not really a good, even on National Poetry Day.
You've got exotic locations and you've got plenty of action in inverted commas, and of course the Kingsman's tailors in Savile Row is the front for a secret service organisation for anyone who doesn't know, and in the first adventure, Harry Hart, played by Colin Firth, recruits young Eggsy from a council estate who was unemployed, played by Taron Egerton. Later, Hart supposedly was shot dead in the head, but here he reappears, unfortunately for Colin Firth, suffering from retrograde amnesia. I'm no expert, but it meant that he thought he was a lepidopterist. So it's Eggsy, together with Merlin, played by Mark Strong, who's his trainer, faces the threat from Poppy, who spreads a virus which affects any user of all types of drugs around the world and holds it to ransom. Only she has the antidote, and we have Eggsy's romance with Princess Tilda of Sweden, played by Hannah Ahlstrom. And the effects of this virus, by the way, are to make your veins horribly visible. May I point out that you can get a similar effect through rage when subjected to total nonsense like this, which goes on and on and on for 141 minutes, and it's obvious from the first 10-minute chase through central London. We see so many chases on screen, some are good and some aren't, and this just doesn't cut the mustard from the very start. Woefully inadequate, garishly coloured and improbable and pathetically puerile. There's no excitement here. The cast is to die for. I mean, to combat a threat from Poppy, Kingsman needs the Statesman, which is their equivalent in the United States, and this is the excuse for Jeff Bridges, a wonderful actor. He's the one person who doesn't make a great fool of himself because he hardly appears. Channing Tatum's there too, Halle Berry. And the low point, and this I really regret, in Elton John's career, because...
Well, he swears, you know. I mean, you get to hear Elton John swearing, which I suppose some people might say is mildly entertaining. I take it, Richard, you're...
Mildly entertaining, with a bunch of feathers in a rather grotesque headgear that he wears, wandering up and down
I take it, Richard...
Almost unbelievably... he's been kidnapped by Poppy because Poppy kidnapped celebrities. You see, it's terrible tripe because this is Elton John's, I think, his nadir. I want to remember him for other things, and I will never forget this clowning. It's stupid. Director Matthew Vaughan really, really fails here. Kingsman's supposed to value the pedigree. The old point is that it's classy, ethical and sartorial standards, fighting to save the world. Well, this belongs in the Stone Age. It's such worthless celluloid.
So I take it you're not necessarily going to have this as an outside bet for Academy Awards season then, Richard?
I dread the next one if they're moving in this direction.
Well, Lauren, you've been privileged to actually witness the vitriol that Richard Fitzwilliams can actually pour forth when he so chooses with respect to particular aspects and so on. I wonder whether I should actually share Phil Leonis' movie of the year and undoubted sort of number one movie of the year in a few moments, but I probably will.
What is it?
Well, before we go there, Lauren, will you be checking out Kingsman the Golden Circle? Or do you say it can't be that bad, surely?
Yeah, it can't be that bad.
Oh, it is.
The trailer looks good.
Yeah, did you see Kingsman 1? The first?
No.
There we are.
Yeah.
Blade Runner 2049 was the response. He is very much giving it a massive two thumbs up, and our Los Angeles correspondent in full dynamic flow effectively said, yes, definitely the movie of the year.
Quite a sobriquet.
Exactly. Brief chat, wearing your hat as royal correspondent about Prince Harry and whether he's getting engaged and wed and sorted out. We can have another royal wedding to actually provide for David Starkey to make comparisons with various other folk across the eras.
Well, I mean, David Starkey is certainly not the person I would turn to when it comes to contemporary royals. He's certainly
Shock me at times, Richard, honestly.
Certainly not been considering his comments about the Queen. I have to say, however, that Harry and Meghan, they were bound to appear because Meghan is based in Toronto, and of course she has this famous role in Suits. After 100 episodes of Suits, she gave an interview to Vanity Fair, unprecedented and unorthodox, literally saying they were an item, they were in love, they were happy. This, when they're seen, when she's he and she hold hands as an official appearance that they're first in, I have to say, 14 months, and we've been watching this for about a year, because they kept it quiet to begin with, and then it was noticed that they had similar bands, you will recall. A very, very clever piece of journalism to spot it, but the facts were that apart from Harry's last November appeal to the international press to stop harassing Meghan and her family, he has said nothing, and still we haven't seen both of them interviewed together. That will come if there's an engagement, and everyone is betting on this, because no such article in Vanity Fair would have appeared without Harry's consent, and probably the consent of Buckingham Palace as well. And the facts are also that she's perfect for him. She's glamorous, but she's an achiever. She's had to fight for where she's actually got, and she's also a humanitarian activist, and it's that aspect of it where she, if she becomes a member of the royal family, she'll be able to do a tremendous amount for charity, but she probably would have to give up her career unless something is arranged, because remember, when Kate's third child is born, Harry is sixth in line to the throne, and that opens...
It'd be yesterday's news, really, that's the key thing.
Oh, no, but he would like the press to believe that, but in fact, remember, George is four, and his siblings...
He'll do the Invictus Games.
Younger, of course, the baby-to-be will be very young for a long time. But the press will... This is the problem. The press will hunt them obsessively, because any link between royalty and show business is fantastic news. Think Grace Kelly and Prince Rainier. Think the Duke and Duchess of Windsor, because Meghan is an American divorcee, and also think that any aspect of her life will be picked over. And she's chosen as, and this is of very considerable interest, because she's biracial, and she's spoken out a great deal about this. This is one of the things she's campaigning about, the difficulties that you face. Other aspects, gender equality for the United Nations, visiting Rwanda on behalf of World Vision Canada, and I've heard her speak on YouTube, and I mean, she is...
Well, that makes perfect sense. Richard, let's just move briefly to Lauren, because it's 8:35, and zooming through the actual morning sequence here on Siren Radio. Lauren, from your own perspective, does this kind of float the boat of people around Colchester and sort of the Essex zone? You just think, yeah, we want to celebrate Meghan Markle, as a case of, I don't know.
I think so.
Oh.
I think it's a relatable relationship for people to...
So you'd be happy for Prince Harry to effectively tie the knot and say, that's okay, well, it'll be an item.
Yeah, I think so. Essex people, yes.
There
Harry
we are.
Popular, you know.
Yeah. Speaking on behalf of the whole county of Essex, Lauren has made that statement, yes. And I think it's well
I think the country degree, and also, as I say, the popularity of Harry, what he's done for charity, the Invictus Games is his third, they'll be next in Australia, and I mean, the way he's helped wounded servicemen, I mean, it's absolutely marvellous. And of course, again, you can lobby at the top for humanitarian causes if you're royal. Meghan would have taken note of that, because she's...
I'm sure Donald Trump would listen. And we move on from that to the news that, as far as the reviews are concerned, I think it's been thumbs middling for Borg versus McEnroe, and thumbs definitely down, I'm afraid, for Kingsman 2, The Golden Circle. Not so much gold, more kind of fool's gold, perhaps.
That's a very much so for anyone who goes to see it.
Well, you know, sometimes that sounds like a challenge to me, Richard. In fact, such a challenge. Recently on DVD, I actually decided to invest in the Guy Ritchie King Arthur story, just to check out.
No,
just to see if you. I just want to see if it was really as bad. I haven't managed to watch it as yet, but it's there. I might report back on that to me.
May I urge you that time is precious. Time on this planet is limited.
Well, so it goes. Richard, have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us on the programme today?
Absolutely have, yes, certainly I have.
And are you back with us again next week?
I look forward to it.
I heard she drove the silvery sports car along the empty streets last night. Shoes from the red brick stairway, just like a hobs.
and relax. Did that pass muster, Lauren? Lauren, of course, one soul who was an active participant, still is actually, and we'll be connecting from Crewe, amazingly enough, and is currently working at Bentley. It was indeed Ben Lewis, of course, who is there, who is indeed in your year.
He is.
Do you miss him?
We do. Mm. We're a small course.
You may never see him again, of course, because you'll have graduated by the time he returns.
Yes.
I'm sure things will work through. I mean, you know, it'll connect together. Once a mid-rate drive-out, always a mid-rate drive-out. As Ian Lennox will confirm, isn't that right, Ian? Exactly.
Indeed.
Congratulations to your daughter, Ian. Louise, of course, 77th out of 20,000 women. 77 out of 20,000 people who ran the Great North Run.
Yeah. Yes. In fact, it was more than 20,000. I was being conservative.
I'm even going to like this now, Ian. There, I've just done it. I've liked it. You know, it's that sort of. I'm not sure whether I want to share it at this moment in time, but I like it. You know, it's very important.
Yes.
Yeah. And as you say, left to speculate on what she might have achieved if she'd taken up running in her teens and not her late 30s. The Lennox Jeans programme for football and drinking have a lot to answer for. It's okay. Appreciate that. Anyway, moving on. Public relations, Ian. In the grand scheme of things, as a jobbing journalist and then TV producer and vine soul and now writer and novelist, what was your view on public relations? Did you sort of think, yes, without PR, the world would be a far darker place?
I never really had much to do with it. Some of my friends went into it, and some of them made quite a good living out of it. And in fact, when I was a young man, I was asked whether I wanted to do it or not. I don't think I would have been very good at it. A lot of it's very technical stuff that they get concerned with. And they have to write, you know, quite detailed pamphlets about things, I think.
Is that so, Lauren?
I wouldn't have enjoyed that. So, anyway.
It can be technical.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, a lot of the money's there, I think.
What about the soul, Ian? It's all very well talking about the finance. What about the soul?
Well, I think
Lauren, let's talk about the soul.
There's only two things about the first job or a job is whether you're going to enjoy it and how much you're going to get paid, really.
Right. Okay. Sometimes, you see, that is the words of a Newcastle United supporter. If you were a Manchester City fan, you'd have a much more spiritual approach to life, but that's okay.
Oh, really? Yeah. There's no money involved in Manchester City.